This is Rose Namajunas, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
This is CBS Sports Radio's and Radio.com Outside the Cage with your host, Ike Feldman. We're being joined by UFC Denver winner and Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. They really need to change that name. Devontae Smith. Devontae trains out of Factor X. And Devontae, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's rest day, so I feel amazing.
All right. I was trying to get a hold of you a couple weeks ago, but you obviously took your time off after a fantastic first round finish against Juliana Rosa. That was beautiful, man. I don't even think you broke a sweat in that. But the fact that we're talking now, does that mean that you're back in camp?
You can say that. I'm more so at the moment training to improve. You know, it's not about only coming out here to train for camps. You know, I got to train to, you know, be trained to get better.
And how does that work? I see that you're from Cleveland. Obviously, Denver's miles away. Do you split the time between both cities?
In a sense, sometimes when I come out here for like two to three months. So I'm like, lately I'm out here a lot more than I'm in Cleveland. I really, you can
the greenery is that good? The greenery is that good?
The work is good, man. You know, I'm surrounded by really great people, great mentorship, great teammates, and just, you know, all around a great environment. And, you know, when I go back home, it's just like, it's more for vacation, you know, winding down, letting my body get that full recovery, you know, and not really thinking about fighting, just, you know, enjoying the fruits of my labor.
Understood, man. The fruits of your labor have been fantastic. Again, we're being joined by Factor X's Devontae Smith. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter, K_O_E_KingCage, Cage with the K. You got to make this easier, man. I want more people to follow you. This is a tough name.
I do
name.
Too, man.
Do you get a lot of heat for your social media names?
It was KOTC. You know, King of the Cage, but then I thought, like, I don't want to just be King of the Cage. Mm-hmm. I will be, and I am King of everything. You know, that's what the KOE stands for. So, you know, I apologize to all my fans and all my future fans for the complications, but if you are a true fan, it don't even matter.
For real, man. And your performances, they speak volumes bigger than your social media presence. How was it, man, taking the fight on 3 weeks' notice? You know, obviously UFC Denver's there, Factor X is Denver. That's the easy part. But take us through the nerves and the weight cut and getting ready for your UFC debut. Obviously, fighting in front of Dana on the Tuesday Night Contender Series is one thing. But, dude, you're in a crowd of like 15, 16, 17,000 people. Take us through that three-week process and then that 1 minute that you destroyed Rosa.
Truthfully, I think it was like 2 weeks. If it wasn't 2 weeks, it was a week. Cause I remember,
even better for the book, man. Even better for the book.
Right. I remember, my agent, he hit me up. We were talking and he was like, man, if we don't, get a fight for this card, we just going to scratch it and, look for, another date. And I don't know where he hit me up asking for where my coach was at. Because I talked to Mark, I got a fight for you, but it's really what you guys could do. Because I found out he was managed under the same, you know, management team, and you know, Jason didn't really want to do that, but you know, it was an opportunity for me, opportunity for him. And truthfully, it was just another day. You know, like I don't come out here to Colorado for 2 to 3 months, you know, missing my family, and you know, not by my, you know, I got friends out here, but pretty much missing my family to come out here and lose. You know, so you say you want to fight. You got to do is sign that contract. You know, so I was more so excited. You know, I wanted to see the Pepsi Center because everybody said it was huge.
Everybody said
it's like the biggest thing here. And I don't know, like, when I, like, actually got to go in the UFC cage and feel the grips, like, I was, like, taking everything in. I was standing by the soft part? The padding. And I was seeing how tall the padding was. Like, you're really just taking everything in. And, you know, I didn't really have any nerves, to tell the truth. Like, to be honest with you, I didn't have any nerves. I was just excited to go. I was just excited to shine, man. That's it. And my coach was like, go out there and change your life. And I'm hearing the music playing, and I'm hearing the lady saying, you know, whenever you're ready, 3, 2, 1, go. And I walk out, and when I see all those people screaming and yelling, some guy was like, F them up. And I start laughing. And there was no nerves, man. Hearing people cheer, boo, it's like I've always been dreaming for, like, of this moment, like, since I was 14, like, always thinking about, like, how would it be when I'm actually there? Like, I would always visualize it, imagine it, you know, manifest it for it to be finally here. Like, when Bruce Buffer, you know, screamed Devontae Smith, you can see the video. I was smiling so hard because I would just want it to shot. I just wanted to fight. I was just excited to go because, you know, it was just another day to me. And getting that knockout in 46 seconds, I feel like that solidified, you know, and it's just my place. You know, they had me in a contender series against Joe Lowry, who was 8-0, and he had a lot of things going for him. CFFC championship, V3 championship, what's that thing called? He went to Dana White looking for a fighter show. And I put him out like he was nothing. And, you know,
I didn't know he was a D3 champ. I didn't know he was a wrestling champ.
No, V3. It's a organization out in is it Memphis? I believe it's Memphis. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm in Memphis. But, you know, he had a lot of things going for him, and I took him out like he was nothing. When I went against Julian Rosa, it was no different. I didn't care in a sense what his style was, who he trained with, how hard he trained, because I know I'm the best in the world, and I know that I'm surrounded by the best team in the world, and I knew I was going to get that win. Like, I manifested it, I visualized it, and I just know. And hearing those people scream, once I hit him with that straight right, and he dropped, and everybody started screaming, I didn't get anything but goosebumps. It was just like, go, like time to go home. And for everybody to be, like, cheering you on, man, it was a great experience, and I can't wait to get back at it again. And shine even brighter.
Amazing, man. Yeah, you shine on that night. You obviously shine on the fight before against Joe Lowry. That was fantastic, man. The elbows against the fence. Taking it back to that fight, are you part of the YouTube age? Obviously, you're a younger cat. You're 25 years old, but are you studying, like, maybe these spinning back fists that maybe I don't have to go to the traditional martial arts schools to learn the traditional moves? Maybe if I learn something online, I could just pick it up. The elbows against the cage when you were defending a takedown was amazing. Where'd you learn that from, and where do you pick up your moves from?
So, at the end of the day, I feel like people complicate things too much. And
agreed.
What I mean by
agreed.
That is, like, you know, everything you were saying, like, mixed martial arts, boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu. Man, we are here to fight. Your job is to hurt your opponent to the point that the referee stops it or he taps. You know, but you're in the hurt business, you know. So, long time ago, I fought a guy, and he was a jiu-jitsu-based guy. And the only thing he wanted to do is take me down, but he had me against the cage, and every time I see the side of his head, I just start elbowing. So once Joe Lowry had me against the cage, he didn't feel strong. He didn't feel like I didn't feel like I was in danger, and I feel like he was just spazzing out because he was getting caught with hands. So he was just shooting just to shoot. He left the side of his head wide open. You know, the first dude I did it, he didn't go out. I just cut him real bad, but he didn't go out. What's the boy named Joe Lowry? He went out, and once I seen that he went limp, the goal is to hurt your opponent until the referee says stop. So if the referee didn't grab me, I was going to keep going until the referee say stop. And like I said, it's a fight, brother. It's a fight. It's a fight to win. And that's my goal, and that's what I want to achieve, and that's what I achieve.
Amazing, man. And you did it. Now, fast forwarding to when you got the call for the 2-week fight on your debut, that was kind of crunch time for you and Mark. It's a UFC debut. It's in the Pepsi Center. It's going to be in front of thousands of fans. There's a lot of pressure on you. You did fantastic in front of Dana. Dana doesn't want to hear any excuses that you took it on 2 weeks, especially that you're the new guy in the business. How was it with Mark? Did you guys sit down and watch film on Julian Arosa, or did you just work on your strengths?
Both.
Okay.
both, you know, we have a great team, a great facility, you know, people who break down fights. But, you know, I was doing my own research as well. And, you know, we collided our ideas and stuff like that. But he did a lot of things that I just see. And I knew that I knew I was faster. I knew I had better range. I knew, it's just, again, the people I train with, you know, they put me through hell, you know. And, you know, I'm not scared to fail, you know, at practice. So I'm doing anything and everything I can to win. I'm trying new things. You know, I'm open to new things. So when it's fight time, like, again, it's just another day. I'm just getting paid for it.
That's the only
difference.
I see that. I see your instincts take over. Did you play any sports before? Football, basketball, baseball?
I played football my senior year, but I only did that because they kept asking me to play. But my sport was wrestling. I was a Bedford Bearcat wrestler. That was my first love.
How'd you pick up striking? Like, what was your first, tool that you picked up? Was it boxing, Muay Thai, Taekwondo?
Yeah, I did do boxing, but I did boxing when I was like, I think it was the seventh grade, because I used to always get in fights with people bigger than me. And my mom, you know, she got tired of that, and she was like, we're going to put you in boxing. You know, back then, I wanted to be like a Power Ranger, you know, Bruce Lee and all that stuff. So I wanted to do Taekwondo and karate, but we couldn't afford it at that time. And so my mom put me in boxing. You know, I got better my hands, better instinct, but, you know, I know it sounds backwards, but wrestling is really my thing in a sense, but I'm just really good with my hands.
So are you waiting till somebody tests your wrestling and jiu-jitsu to bring it out, but no matter what, you're always going to start on the feet?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Like, I only use what I need.
Amazing.
You know, if I ain't got to use everything, then I ain't got to use anything.
It's worked out, man. And take us through the process of signing to a fight gym. I obviously got to jump out there to UFC Denver. Chris Camozzi and the Camozzi family welcomed me in. I got to speak to them a couple of minutes. And obviously, this is how I made the connection. Thank you, Kat Johnson, connecting me, Devante and Mark. But take us through the process of signing it, like a big gym like Factory X. Is it you fly out there, you train for a day, you feel out the vibes? Or is it you see what you see on social media and that's it? Take us through the process, if you don't mind.
So I'm going to make this an extremely long story, extremely short. So after my first pro loss against John Gunther, I was a co-main, and the main event was a guy named Brian Rogers. And, you know, he was giving some encouraging words and stuff like that. And he was like, dude, you should totally, you know, come out to Denver for Factory X. And I was like, okay, cool, but, you know, my obligations at home kind of, you know, stiffened me from, you know, making that jump, because yeah. I had to work, I had to pay the mortgage, I had to help pay the bills, and then my job, they were pretty lenient, but they wouldn't let me go for like a whole week, you know, and, you know, the situation happened to where it was a blessing in disguise, but I had to quit that job due to, you know, situations. And I said, screw it. You know, I talked to my mom, and, you know, like, you know, this is really what I want to do. And, you know, she was like, I got you back. And, you know, do what you think is best. And I talked to Mark, because me and Mark always talked after I got connected to him through Brian Rogers. And we used to always talk about, you know, me coming out. And when I finally came out for that 1 week, man, I learned. There was a different level. I was like, this is before I was even had the chance to for the Dana White Contender Series. I was like, are any of these guys in the UFC? Like, no. And I'm like, there's people like this that's not in the UFC. So I can only imagine how the UFC fighters, like the elite fighters, you know, perform. And, you know, back home, I don't really, you know, not blowing down on my city or my state, but just being real, back home, I don't really get pushed like I do when I'm out here. Mark, he's seriously one of the best coaches I've ever had. You know, he's pretty much, excuse my language, a no-bullshit type of guy, but he has funny times and goofy times. But when it comes to training, Mark don't be playing.
I believe it, man. I see his profile picture. I don't think that guy's ever smiled.
Man, when Mark, when his train, he do not be like, he make jokes every now and then. Cool guy. But when his business is business. So, you know, but getting that feel of like, wow, like the people that were smaller than me were getting at me. And I'm just like not understanding like what I was doing wrong, but it showed me that I had so much more to learn. And after, like, I think my first or second time, it was pretty much, like, close to me leaving, going back home. I talked to Mark, like, you know, pretty much told him, like, I want to join the team. And he said, you know, pretty much, you know, he liked my attitude, he liked my dedication, and he loved to have me a part. And pretty much that's pretty much what I didn't know anything about Factory yet.
That was a long story, man. What the hell are you talking about short story?
Yeah, you're right. I trust me, I had so many more details. So a short term story. I made it medium.
Maybe if you come to New York anytime soon, or I fly out to Denver again, maybe we could hear the rest of the details. Again, we're being joined by Devontae Smith, UFC lightweight, on social media at K_O_E_. I'm not making this up, folks. King Cage, Cage with the K. My final thing, man. Obviously, the ladies treat you well. I saw you on the Dana White Contender Series talking to Laura Asenco. I mean, I think she had a thing for you, but she has a dude, man. Please take it easy on Laura. She's a good person in the media.
Dude, yeah, I love Laura. She's a great person. I love her.
Yeah, she is. But forget that. Let's focus on you, man. Were you being facetious or were you dead serious? Like, you have an advantage in the game because of your genetics. Is it that it's your speed? Is it that your strength? I talked to Iaquinta. Why is his right so strong? Or Connor, why is his left so strong? Do you cut down from like 25 pounds, 185, 190? What exactly behind the scenes, if you could take us? No PEDs, please. No PEDs.
No. It's all natural. All natural over here. truthfully, I walk around at a very – I think my body type is a – yeah, I'm more lean, you know, but when I fill up, the heaviest I ever get really is 175.
What?
You know, yeah.
Dude, I
heard
Khabib, I heard Felder, Gleison Tibau, I heard they're all 190 plus, 175?
Hey, man, that's the biggest I get is 175, but.
Yes.
Khabib, and all those other names you name, they can all get it. I don't care how big you is, because like I said in the beginning, man, I used to get in fights with nothing but bigger people, so it ain't nothing new to me. It's like a blessing and it's a curse. I'm like in that middle because I can't do that 45. That's like, you know, I thought about it a couple of times, but that is too much strain on my heart.
Dude, Siler, Steven Siler, one of your training partners and your boy out there, he said he's 177. When I talked to him in November, I go, oh, my God. I go, dude, you got to cut 30 pounds?
Yeah, I'm cool on all that. I'm cool on you. Y'all can keep that. I'm cool with my little 2015, sometimes 10. I'm cool with that. I don't need to be doing all that extra stuff.
But strategically, it's like you can't do squats. Like, you can't, like, gain any muscle in your shoulders or your legs. Like, if you're trying to cut down 30 pounds, it's impossible. I understand technique. It can rule out everything. But you still want to feel good when you walk in there. You don't want to feel like a hobbled self.
Exactly. And I feel like the Julia Rosa, mm-hmm. I felt amazing. Yes, it was only 46 seconds. But when I tell you, as if I'm talking to you right now, like calm, cool, collected, I'm breathing normally. That's how I was after that. Like I run, and I think that's another reason why I be losing so much. But I run miles.
Really?
You know, and I just stay focused, stay positive, and I only visualize the best. You know, that's be with it.
Amazing,
you know,
man.
I'm realistic and I'm very strategical. And again, I'm surrounded by great people, great mentorship, and a great team. And every day I'm learning. Every day.
Well,
every day.
It shows, man. And learn some more. Who the hell do you want next? Top 25, top 15? What are you looking for?
Top 15. You know, I ain't doing this to the. I ain't doing this to look pretty, man. I just look pretty doing it. So we straight to the top, man. Hey, it's no reason to be doing this if you're not doing this to have that C. you know, right next to your name. I'm not really big on contenders. I don't want to be a contender. I'm going to be champion. And I understand you got to be a contender to be able to fight a champion, but, you know, my name will have the C right next to it, being a champion.
Yep.
You know, if Khabib is still there, you know, by the time I get to that point, I will beat him. Whoever is at the top, I will beat, you know, because, again, I'm not out here to lose. You know, that's not what I'm out here in Colorado. I'm not here to, you know, I have fun and all that stuff. But, again, just like Mark, when it comes to business, it's business. It's fight time. So.
Amazing, man. Amazing. I got Devontae Smith, thank you for joining me. Follow him on social media. I said it twice. I'm not going to say it again. Amazing UFC Denver fight. Amazing fight against Joe Lowry. Can't wait to see what the UFC gives you next. You have an amazing team, an amazing coach, Factory X in Denver. Good luck to everything. And what's your New Year's resolution, really quick?
New Year's resolution.
Outside of fighting.
Oh, outside of fighting? to always improve, you know, on me. You know, you better to live life. And survive to live, not live to survive.
Amazing. Devontae, thank you so much. If you come to New York, if I come to Denver, I'll hit you up, man. Appreciate the time. Seriously, we went over the 10-15-minute limit. I really appreciate it, man. Have a good day.
You too.
This is Cowboy, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
What's up, guys? This is Daniel Cormier, and you're listening to WFAN's Outside the Cage podcast.
This is CBS Sports Radio's and Radio.com's Outside the Cage. I'm Mike Feldman with Pete Hoffman. We're being joined by, it's a Factory X episode. We're being joined by head coach of Factory X, the mixed martial arts mastermind, Mark Montoya. Follow Mark on Twitter, at Coach M. Montoya. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. It's a cold-ass day in New York, but you guys deal with your share of coldness. But I just heard from Josh Copeland, from talking to him a couple weeks ago when he was getting ready for PFL, that is this true, that Denver sees the most sun in the United States?
It's got over 300-plus days of sunshine. Just don't tell anybody. We don't want any more people here, that's all.
I would move out there with my wife for different reasons, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
I think a lot of people have moved here for different reasons, and then they're like, oh, shit, it's sunny here, too.
Dude, going down to the downtown, I was like, this is like a winter Silicon Valley. It's like, or a winter L.A. You guys got the beautiful bars, obviously the fancy greenery shops. And you guys are one of the capitals of mixed martial arts. So if we could start with that, how did you become a martial artist? How did you get into MMA and obviously developing this amazing Factory X facility?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I started as a kid in as boxing originally and wrestled as a kid. I always loved boxing. That was something that I always had some passion for. And I loved to watch boxing on TV when I was a kid. They used to have that. Boxing on ABC Sports on Saturday afternoons, and I'd watch that all the time and just loved it. So started boxing myself, and then I played team sports as well. Played team sports through high school, and then played college baseball. And then after college baseball, you know, I was a competitive guy. I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. So
wow.
I was watching ESPN2 late at night. It was an ISK Strike Force was on back in the day, and they were doing Muay Thai kickboxing, and I had never seen it before. This was in 97, and I was like, man, that looks like a lot of fun. And I just got lucky. I found a gym that was near my house, and you know, Dwayne Ludwig, Oscar Martinez, Brad Gum, who fought in UFC, and Dave Ruiz, all those guys were training at that gym, actually. And I just got really lucky that it was down the street from my gym or my house. And so I started training Muay Thai and just fell in love with it. And then, you know, competed. And I actually got thrust into coaching right away. I always felt like I wasn't ready to coach. I was, you know, I was wanting to just train and fight. And they saw something in me, and they were like, no, you know, you can coach these guys. And I was like, man, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, you know. And so, but they threw me in, and I started coaching. And then, of course, after I was done competing, you know, I was coaching just part time and working full time. And then I had four of my fighters that I was training at the time, one of which was Chris Camozzi, who you guys would probably know best.
Of course.
He was one of the four. And they came to me and said, "Hey, coach, we'd like for you to train us full time." And I said, "Man, I can't do that. I got a full time job and I'm already working 60 plus hours. I got a family, the whole thing." And I told them to go look at different gyms in the state, and they did. And they came back a week later and said, "We don't want to do that. We want you to coach us." So I went to my wife and said, "Hey, on top of all the stuff I'm doing already, I'm going to coach these guys full time." And she was like, "Don't quit your full time job, and don't quit your day job," type thing. And I said, "Well, you watch. I'm going to make this into something that it's not now, but it'll become it will become one of the best gyms in the world." And you know, you fast forward 9 years later, and you know, we're the best gym in the world, and I'm super proud of these athletes and my coaches and my family support to even be sitting here talking about it, because we're truly blessed.
Amazing, man. And like you said, the best gym in the world. You guys are getting a lot of attention lately, obviously, with Anthony Smith, the Camozzis, Steven Seiler, Macy Barbe, Barber. Can you explain to the persona? I mean, on social media, I don't think you've ever smiled in the last 9 years, man. You seem like a stone-cold, chiseled-faced guy. Can you talk to us like sitting somebody down behind the scenes, when to push the gas, when to hit the brake on somebody's training, and what's been the hardest part to get somebody ready for a fight? I mean, you said you weren't ready for this, but, dude, everything's turned to fruition. Everything's worked out. You're one of the best coaches in the world.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. You know, I obviously the you know, we're not an overnight success at all. It's just we've had some breakthrough years, and rightly so. I mean, these kids have been putting in the work to have breakthrough years, and I've been sacrificing along with them. You know, I traveled 40 weeks last year in 2018.
Wow,
that's not easy to do. That's the sacrifice and commitment that these kids are making as well, though. So if we can do it together as a collective group, then it's not hard to get guys motivated to go out there and change their lives. I mean, ultimately, these kids have the opportunity in their hand. They have the cards in their hand to go change their lives. It's just a matter of, will they do it? Will they put the commitment, the consistency, and the vast sacrifice in place to go do it? And people like Anthony Smith, you know, Macy Barber, Devontae Smith, Chris Camozzi, Joe Warren, you know, all these people that we get to train, and even kids that you guys don't know about yet that are just up and coming killers, you know, they're putting in the work and they want to go make a statement, and they believe in themselves, and they continue to believe in and trust my vision. And when you put something together like that, it's special, and we have something super special here in at Factory X.
Now, taking it back to one of your earlier points, again, we're being joined by Mark Montoya, Factory X mastermind on Twitter, at Coach M. Montoya. You said taking that leap of faith, kind of convincing your wife. It's always hard to convince the wife. I'm recently married. I just left my producing job to pursue MMA full-time, flew out to Denver, right. Flew out to Vegas. A lot of crazy shit's going on. But the wife's aside, Devontae was saying that you kind of sold him by the way you just your presence, your aura, and just speaking to him. Obviously, that's easier now. Was it harder when you started to convince these guys to, like, kind of follow you on this, like, fairy dust tale and to follow you all the way out to Denver?
No. We didn't have awesome. We didn't have the same people. We didn't have the same clout that we have now. But no, because one of the first things I recognized when I went to my wife and said, "Hey, we're going to do this full time," is A, we're going to run this like a business because we have to be able to make money to sustain it, and I have a family to take care of, and right. B, though, the most important thing is that we got to build a culture that we want to be around every day. And so you know, I started that culture, but really these guys continue to carry it on, and you know, it's all via actions. It's not words, it's all via actions. So no, it wasn't hard to get people in. I always tell guys that call me and say, "Hey coach, I'm interested in training with you guys, potentially joining your team." You know, of course we have a long discussion about my expectations, theirs, their goals, my goals. And a couple things always come out. One is, as a coach, you know, I want to win 5 world titles in 5 years. I just put that out this year.
Wow.
as one of my goals. And it's a lofty goal. It's going to take some divine intervention, and it's going to take a lot of hard work. But one of the things I tell these kids is, you know, I want to win world titles. And if you're not on the same page, then I'm not the right coach for you. And so, you know, that's something they need to know, my vision. They need to know how I'm driven as well. It's not that every single kid is going to be a world title holder, because that's just not the case. But the point is that they're going to strive to be that. And if they'll strive to be that, then we're on the same page. And you can't fault them if they put in all the effort to get there and they suddenly fall short. That just means it wasn't meant to be for them, right? So, but that's one thing. The second thing is, I always say, I could tell them how great we are, but I'd rather just have them come out and experience that for themselves and then decide. Get an evaluation of us get an evaluation of them. See if it's the right fit, if the culture is what makes sense for them and us. And if it is, then we essentially join forces. And that's what I've done with every kid from day one. And so it hasn't been that hard, because we've been able to just show in person what we're about. And most of the time it works out.
Yeah, man, for real. Devontae Smith, Macy Barber, obviously getting done UFC Denver. I was out there. I was lucky enough to have your boy, Chris Camozzi, invite me to the gym, man, secret facility. I promise no video was taken, just still shots. I promise. I want to talk about your style. There's obviously the grind it out, Javier Mendez. There's obviously the I got to think 20 years before I do anything, the Frost Zahabi style. Could you explain to the listeners, and how would you sit down with fighters? How would you explain your style of coaching?
My style of coaching, yeah. So,
not a fashion, not your style.
My style of coaching is very much so in the trenches. I train almost every day with my fighters.
Whoa, nice.
Of course, I my number one job is to coach, but also 1A is to continue to learn and evolve, right? And so I train almost every day with my fighters. I don't hard spar anymore, but I still flow spar and tech spar with them. I still roll with them or wrestle with them. I do cage work and you know, full MMA drilling and stuff with them. So my style is very interactive. I'm in there, I'm holding mitts, I'm rolling with them, I'm doing whatever it takes to see and feel what they need to accomplish. So, you know, I'm also very technical when it comes to breakdowns and coming up with game plans and strategies and recognizing patterns and those kind of things. That's something that I take a lot of pride in doing, and also I'm also good at. So when it comes to the technical side and the breakdown side, I'm very methodical when it comes to that, but not overly so that it's so complicated that a fighter can't do it. But I think that's why it's important to get in there and have the practical application, not only with other partners, training partners, but also, you know, myself and them. And that's, you know, it's just a teaching style. My style is very teaching and very mentor heavy.
Amazing, man. Now, the only before going to your gym, the only thing I saw of behind the scenes was the show Kingdom. I mean, where everybody's fucking everybody, they're throwing shit at mirrors, they're punching yeah. camera guys. You guys didn't seem to let off that type of vibe, but you know, you took the leap 9 years ago. Are you able to see when a kid walks in that he's going to be a star, or one or two or three fights later you can tell? What exactly do you know that this guy's going to amount to something? Or are you just open-ended? You never know what's going to happen. Maybe on fight night, different fighters react differently when they wake up, when they sleep, maybe throughout the camp. I've heard so many times that Mike Pyle was a better fighter in the gym than what we saw in the UFC. How exactly can you tell if a kid's going to be a star and potentially a UFC or Bellator champion?
Well, some of it's developed. Excuse me. Some of it's developed. Some of it takes some time. You know, we gotta be able to forge the iron, right? So, you've got to go out there, and we've gotta put them in the fire, and we gotta heat them up and see: do they bend, break? Do they disappear? Do they transform into something bigger and better than they were when they stepped foot in there. Mm-hmm. And then also, what is their ego like? Are they willing to take chances in practice, and are they willing to fail so that they learn?
Yeah.
And so those are the things that I look for. I look for, are you coachable? Can you check your ego at the door? Are you athletic? How driven are you? And then do you have the will, want, need to sacrifice like no one else is going to, and be obsessed with this sport like no one else is going to? And when you see that mixture, then you start to recognize via actions that these kids actually have the makeup of being a champion. Now, to get to, like, I trained Joe Warren for most of his career, and Joe Warren and I have won multiple world titles with Bellator. He's the only Bellator athlete to win two titles in two different weight classes, right? So,
awesome.
I know what it's like to see that athlete, and I know what kind of work ethic and skill it takes. And you know, the world title holders are always a little bit off, not in a bad way, but in a good way. They're always just a little bit different than the rest, right?
So, love it.
What I look for is, you know, everyone on the mat essentially is common people, right? I'm looking for those common people to rise above and be elite and be uncommon. And the people that are uncommon are the people that you see, you know, go to the next level, go to the UFC, go to Bellator, go to those type of higher level organizations. And then the guys that get there, do they remain uncommon, or do they get complacent and say, I made it, right? And so those are the, and sometimes it takes some time. Sometimes it's just timing's everything. Like Anthony Smith, a good example. You know, Anthony Smith had a good career, of course, before he came and saw me.
Yep.
It was good timing when he and I met. And he had gone through the ringer a little bit here and there. He did some really great stuff before he got here. And now he's, with the timing and just the chemistry that he and I have, you know, now we're in a position to fight for a world title against John Jones. And that's something that some of it is just timing, and some guys just take their path and process is longer than others. So, you know, whatever plan, you know, God has for you, he's got for you. But there are tendencies that we see and that I see, like I just described, that bring kids to rise above and become uncommon.
Yeah, and that, I feel like most of what you named in terms of character attributes, I feel like Anthony checks that off. And let me throw one in there, man. He seems like a blue-collar guy, very humble. He had a chance, dude. He was on national TV to kind of spat back and forth with John Jones on that the interview process, but he kept composed. Obviously, he's a monster when he steps in there. When did you and Anthony connect exactly? Which one of his fights before or after did you guys connect, like when you first started together?
Andrew Sanchez was our first fight together.
Dude, we talked to Andrew before that, and he's like, yeah, fight some guy named Lionheart. We're like, all right, go Anthony, kick his ass. And then all of a sudden Anthony Smith kills him, and for us, that put him on the map. How's it been? So, dude, you've been during this whole process of changing weight classes, been on an amazing tear in 2018, and now fighting the greatest mixed martial artist of all time, with the tiny bit of asterisks there with the metabolites or picograms, whatever the hell you want to call it. Can you take us through that process of the last 2 years of working with Anthony and where he's at now? And if he has not plateaued, but like he's not walking in there like an asshole, but he's walking in there with his chest out, kind of like a rooster, like, hey, guys, I can be a leader for this gym. I can be a leader for Factory X. Can you take us through that two-year process with Anthony?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the last 2 years have been an amazing ride. I mean, I'm just super blessed to be on this journey with him. He's believed in me and me as well. I've believed in him. And so the last 2 years has been a blast, man. I'll tell you, the first fight I did with him, he was obviously still cutting down to 185, and I told him and his other coaches that this was a problem. 185, I didn't believe was his weight class. He was too big of a guy, and his body wasn't reacting well after the weight cuts. even though he was being successful there. We do have one blip on the radar, and that's the Thiago Santos fight. And I've said this in interviews before, Santos beat us fair and square, but that was the worst weight cut I've ever been a part of. That's not an excuse of why we lost at all.
How bad was it?
It was terrible. We cut weight for 12 hours straight through the night. We ran out of hot water in Belém, Brazil. They were trying to boil water on stoves. We didn't have a dry sauna because there wasn't one that existed in Belém. We had a head-out sauna that the UFC provided, which are good, and we're thankful we had that. But it took us 12 straight hours. We stayed up through the night. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We lost the fight. That's not why we lost the fight. But the point is that type of weight cut, it was not beneficial to Anthony Smith. I said that from the first fight I did with him as a coach. As a team, I brought everyone together and said, look, we're not doing this weight cut anymore. And if that means that you don't want me to continue to coach you, fine. And Anthony was like, hell no, I'm not doing that weight cut anymore.
Wow.
And we went to 205. I talked to his manager, Jim Walter, and just said, hey man, this is what needs to happen. And, we all got together as a group and decided that was the best thing for Anthony, and Anthony agreed. And so, you know, at 205, of course, he's been on a tear, and at 85, he was on a tear, but at 205, he's been on a tear. And I'll tell you, the biggest thing is not his performances in the cage. It's the fact that he can go into training and enjoy training and learn and evolve as a mixed martial artist because he doesn't have this massive weight cut. And, you know, for 6 weeks, he's just miserable leading up to the fight. He's able to lock in mentally and learn and evolve. And that's the biggest thing. And that, as a coach, that's what I want to see, is these guys growing between fights and being slightly different every time they walk in the cage, so that the coaches that were game planning for that athlete they saw last fight, they see some surprises when they get in there. So that's what we've done. And, you know, it's been an amazing ride, man. We've had the chips stacked against us all 2018, if you think about it. We had a lot of short notice opportunities with Anthony. We stepped up to the plate. We went to Germany on like 6 days notice to fight Shogun, who's one of the best ever. You know, he's a trailblazer in the sport. I respect him a ton. He gave us an opportunity to go and fight him, and all, nothing but respect to him. But, you know, we've had many opportunities in 2018 that the chips were stacked against us, in the sense of statistics and time and how long we were able to get prepared. That's why people have asked me, you know, the world title fight against John Jones on March 2nd isn't a lot of time. And I said, man, it's a lot more time than we had to prepare for Shogun. So,
for real.
8 weeks is an eternity compared to that. And we're not taking it lightly. We're maximizing every second we have, and we're ready to go shock the world.
Amazing, man. Seriously. And the best part about this is that we, the media, haven't heard about all this, like the weight cutting, the 6 day notice. The dude has literally just put on his hard hat and gone to work every day. My final thing, Mark, when it comes to Anthony Smith mentally, I feel he's got the edge on John Jones. I feel Gustafson was fighting angry, maybe a little frustrated. I feel DC always feels like he's got a punch up to his bigger brother. Dude, I don't know if it's like the biggest dude in the locker room, but I feel like Anthony Smith is not scared of John Jones and his antics. For you, why on March 2nd in Las Vegas is Anthony Smith going to get it done against John Jones? My last thing, man. Thank you again for the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, he isn't scared. I mean, Anthony is a, you know, I categorize fighters in three categories. They're either a fighter, they're a competitor, or they're an athlete. And, of course, any fighter can be a mixture, but if you had gun to my head and said, hey, what is Anthony Smith, I'd tell you he's a fighter. You know, he'd fight John Jones in the Walmart parking lot for no money. So he's just born that way. He's a born fighter, and he's someone that excels that way, and he's not afraid of anyone, and nor should he be. He has the mental fortitude and the physical skills and attributes to go out and finish anyone in front of him. So, like I've said to Anthony and many of my fighters, you know, Joe Warren and I used to talk about this all the time. Just remove the face and the name of the guy in front of you and go run through that body, right? And so that's what we're doing. It's just a body in front of us, and Anthony Smith is ready to go run through that body. Everyone's human. So is John Jones. And we're not putting a face and name to that guy. We respect him. And he's one of the best ever for sure. But, you know, Anthony walks around Factory X as humble as he did the day he walked in here before I started training him for the Andrew Sanchez fight. But he's also hungry. He also has that chip on his shoulder, like, no one's going to beat me. And if you don't let the mystique of John Jones get to you and you remove the face and the name, then we just go run through the next obstacle in front of us, and that's what Anthony's going to do.
Amazing. March 2nd, Las Vegas. Mark, hopefully I could catch up with you and your team. Maybe we could try some of the experimental stuff out there. Just kidding. good luck to Anthony. Mark Montoya on Twitter, at Coach M. Montoya. Mark, 2018 was amazing. 2019, can't wait for what's going to happen for you and your team. And, I don't know, get your wife a bottle of wine or something. It seems like she's always busting your balls. Do you have any advice? I know you've been married forever. I'm just married 18 months. Do you got any advice for the married man?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, man, I've been married for 20 years.
Oh, shit.
When they asked my wife how you guys been married for 20 years, she says he travels a lot, you know? So that's how we – no, I'm kidding. Actually, my wife is my biggest supporter, man. She's without her and my kids' support, none of this is possible, to be honest. And I know that sounds cliche, but it's such the fact. You know, without them sacrificing what they do and giving me the ability to go out here and chase dreams with my fighters and go around the world and do that and be blessed to do that, man, none of this is possible. So nothing but gratitude and thanks to them. And I guess if I give you any advice, just go praise your wife, bro. You get extra kitchen points and you're ready to rock and roll.
I will try.
I just did it for you. I just gave you the blueprint. There you go.
Amazing. She listens to like one out of four episodes. Hopefully she doesn't hear the recipe. Or hopefully she does. Mark, right. Amazing things for you and your team in 2019. Thank you again for the time, brother, and good luck with everything. All right.
You're welcome, man. I appreciate you. Anytime you need something, let me know.
This is Tyron, the Chosen One Woodley, UFC welterweight champion of the world, and you're listening to Outside the Cage.